And welcome back. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about the dark side, and we'll get your take on it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Mitch Horowitz. We'll get to your calls as well. Back to Anton LaVey for just a moment. I mean, you admire the guy, don't you?
I do. And I really would have dismissed him a few years ago. If you look in my book, Occult America, he's not even in there. I didn't regard him as a serious figure on the occult. But I think I was mistaken, and I've written an article called Good Clean Satanism. I'm being a little facetious, and this is about Anton's career. It's up at medium.com, along with my article, The Devil's Reading List, and I explore some of these questions and issues in those pieces.
Mitch, you also wrote an article called The Devil's Reading List. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's up at Medium right now. In The Devil's Reading List, I list six books you can go to, most of them available online, very accessible, very easy to read, ranging from the Bible to Anton LaVey to William Blake. And you can explore some of these questions about maybe there is a counter-narrative, maybe there is an alternative narrative around Satan, around the dark side, that has run throughout Western history and that we haven't really adequately understood. There's a new and there's a fresh way of looking at things, or of just asking some fresh questions. So that's what The Devil's Reading List is all about. It's a very simple, very straightforward article, just gives you six things to read. Most of them are available online, and it's just a way of performing a kind of thought experiment and saying, look, maybe there's a counter-narrative here. It's just something to consider.
Do you think the creation of the dark side, of the perception of evil, was basically just that, a perception?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that we perceived adversity, we perceived evil, we named it as something forbidden. But look, if you accept the biblical storyline, then you would have to accept that everything emanates from the Creator, including the serpent in the garden, including the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You know, some scholars, some biblical scholars reason that the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life are one in the same. If you read the early chapters of Genesis, it's actually rather ambiguous. Now, there are other writers who will make the case that there are these differing forces in the universe, and that Satan is one of them, and God is one of them. There's a brilliant writer and thinker and religious innovator named Michael Aquino, who runs an organization called the Temple of Set. He's a retired lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Army. He wrote an allegory called the Diabolicon, and that is an allegory that takes a completely fresh and inverse sounding of the creation myth and see Satan as a noble figure. It's linked in my article, The Devil's Reading List. I would say, just look at it. Just check it out. It's just a way of asking a question and saying, could there be this counter-narrative in Western life that actually makes sense? It's just a question and a thought experiment.
It seems that you're saying that there's no evil, but I know you believe there is some.
I do believe there is evil, and I believe evil emanates from the forcible denial of another person attaining his or her highest potential. You know, a reader, one of the readers of my article, The Devil's Reading List, objected to that and said, well, look, what if someone sees it as his highest potential to go out and commit murder? And I would say, well, that's where the ethic, the virtue of self-defense becomes more important. My point is, you cannot forcibly prevent another person from attaining or from seeking his or her highest human potential. That to me is evil. That to me is violence. And that legitimizes self-defense.
We're with Mitch Horowitz. The Catholic Church, Mitch, has created an exorcism program for its priests,
yeah.
And it's growing. They said
growing, George, for sure.
Yeah, they said a few weeks ago that they're having more and more demand for this. So what does that tell you?
Absolutely true. You know, the church has actually more than quadrupled its number of certified exorcists here in the United States. The number used to be 12, and in recent years it's grown to 50, more than quadrupled. And the church has said it is in response to demand. There is a greater demand for the exorcism rite. Now, this is interesting because one could say, well, gee, what's going on here? Is there a greater demand for the exorcism rite because evil is on the march? Some people blame New Agers and say, you know, all these folks out there who are playing around with Ouija boards, like Mitch Horowitz are causing all these problems, and that's why we're having these cases of demonic possession. There could also be a political reason. After Vatican II, the supernatural was somewhat downplayed in the church, and there has been a kind of counter motion, a reverse motion against that. There's been a return ever since John Paul II to the mystical, to the supernatural in the church. Could also be that's why we're seeing the development of more exorcists in America. But there's no question about it. The number has grown from 12 to 50, so we are seeing changes.
And, you know, that original case of the little boy from Baltimore who ended up in St. Louis that the movie was based on. They turned
that's
it turned
that's
him
right.
into a girl. But,
Blair from
Linda
the
Blair.
Exorcist. Or Megan as the character was.
But I mean, the priests, I tried to interview the last one who died, but I was never able to get to him. But something horrible happened during that
something
exorcism.
Something horrible happened there, and it's very interesting. You know, there's so much to unpack with regard to The Exorcist. First of all, that movie was so influential, it really colored everybody's point of view about all this, and in some ways, for the worse, because, you know, it sort of cemented this point of view that, you know, there's a black and white good and evil, and demon possession is, you know, beds levitating and young girls vomiting pea soup. But there's also, and this may sound strange, but think about it for a moment with me, there's a positive possession as well. Edgar Cayce, the great channeler, who was a Christian mystic, in a certain sense, you could say channeling is a kind of possession. A lot of us are interested in channeled literature. A lot of us have individual channelers that we're interested in. Now, when an individual is serving as a vessel for some sort of channeled intellect, as Edgar Cayce did, he referred to it as the source. In a way, that is also a kind of possession. So you can see a positive and a negative side to possession as well. The Exorcist gave us and popularized the negative side. And it's interesting also in these cases of possession. I was talking to a nurse in a psychiatric facility just a couple of days ago about this. There could be more than one thing going on. A person could be suffering from a physical malady, a mental malady, and a spiritual malady, and these things are all happening at once, and they all require treatment. It may not just be one thing that's happening.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's start with Donna in North Carolina. Hey, Donna, go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Mitch.
Yes. Hey.
What I want to ask you is, in Genesis, we'll start at the beginning. In Genesis, what do you think would have happened if the serpent had not approached Eve? And that was interesting. Have you ever thought why the serpent went through Eve instead of Adam? Mm-hmm. What if he hadn't approached Eve and, you know, introduced the concept of going ahead and eating what was told to them not to eat?
Yeah.
What would our life be like?
Wow. That's an enormous question. That's a fascinating question. And, you know, it can only deepen our sense of wonder. There's no answering it, but one could say, well, look, would there even be scripture? Would we have a story of Cain and Abel? Would we have a story of Noah? Would we have a story of the Tower of Babel? Would all the events that have sort of shaped our sense of ourselves throughout Western history have even come to be? Because in a certain sense, you could almost see paradise as a place where nothing happens. And in one sense, it can seem wonderful, but in another sense, it can seem very immature and very stunted and not quite fully human. And maybe if you see Eve, who was kind of a physical adjunct to Adam, as the more sensitive, searching side of Adam, maybe that's why the serpent came to Eve. And we're sometimes told that Eve seduced Adam into eating the apple or the fruit, as it was. But if you actually look at Genesis 3, Eve didn't really do any arm twisting. There wasn't any seduction. She just said to him, this fruit is good to eat, and he took it without any resistance. So, you know, there's been kind of this historical sense that Eve is at fault for having fallen victim to the serpent and then seducing Adam into eating, but he didn't seem to need any seduction at all. But it's a fascinating question, because if the serpent had never approached Eve, none of the events of the Bible as we know them ever would have taken place. So we would have had paradise, but we wouldn't perhaps be human in the way that we are today, and that we've come to think of human life as being a life of complexity, a life of choices, a life of knowledge of good and evil.
Mitch, is this blown out of proportion by religion?
Well, that is an interesting question, George. It depends upon how one approaches religion. You know, I mean, if people approach religion as a closed circuit and they define their religious search as I'm right, you're wrong, then I think we get into sort of objectifying certain people and certain ideas as unquestionably evil and certain things as unquestionably right. A friend of mine said the definition of fundamentalism is very simple. I'm right, you're wrong. That's fundamentalism. Whether you're materialist, whether you're atheist, whether you're devoutly religious, if you get into that I'm right, you're wrong mentality, you've entered into the waters of fundamentalism. And I think that's the opposite direction of what religion is supposed to be about, which is really knowing ourselves in our highest iteration.
All right, back to the phone calls we go. Bill in Virginia, east of the Rockies. Bill, go ahead, sir.
Hey there.
Mitch. I applaud you, sir. I truly applaud you. Thank you very much for the open-mindedness that you've adopted. I'm a traditional witch, and I'm a left-handed path witch,
right.
So I'm considered a dark witch.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right, everything you've said all night. And I just got two things that I think the audience really should know. The Vatican actually has an altar to Lucifer, and they do a mass every year to Lucifer. And then, you know, the first caller question, and George brought up Adam and Eve, and you've mentioned the serpent. In my overall aspect of this, I consider the apple the key.
Mm-hmm.
The apple was, in my opinion, consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yes.
when God created Adam, he created Lilith first.
Yes.
And Lilith was very rebellious, and she was cast down. And then Eve was conceived by a rib of Adam. Now, I know this might be controversial to a lot of people, but I see the statement of, I created man, and he was good. Was good.
Yep.
But what was man in the garden? They were naked. They didn't realize where they were. They didn't realize anything. They were like a dog and a cat. They were pets to God.
Yeah.
They were a
yeah.
creation of joy. They were like having a dog. And
right.
what Lucifer did as the light bearer was free man, and the apple was consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, thank you for biting the apple.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm not going to be as popular with every listener and every caller.
No, I don't think you will.
but I do appreciate that. And, George, this is what I love about your audience. There's all kinds of folks listening in, and we're going to hear from people who have the opposite perspective. But I agree with everything that Bill just said, and I think that he demonstrated a great deal of insight. That is my point of view. That is my perspective. There's going to be folks who feel very differently, and we'll hear from them. But it's a tribute to the Coast listeners that, you know, we have this spectrum of opinion.
Mitch, we've always heard that those people in power, the Illuminati types, are the ones that like to dabble with the occult and satanic things. What do you hear?
There's not much that I've detected on a political level that's going on with the left-hand path, the satanic path, the things that we've been talking about. It's more artists who will get involved with it. And I want to share a little secret with your listeners. It won't be much of a secret after I announce it on Coast to Coast AM, but it's something that everybody will find interesting.
Right.
There's an album out, a 2-CD set called Lords of Chaos. I have no connection to it, but it's a history of occult music. It's a history of satanic-inspired music. And there's an artist on the album called Mick J. He's identified as Mick J. Mick J is Mick Jagger. And one of his compositions appears on the CD set. It's called Invocation of My Demon Brother, and it's Mick Jagger's composition of a invocation of some sort of a demonic entity, demonic being. It's an extraordinary composition. I think it's one of the greatest things Mick Jagger has ever written. It's really wonderful. It's on a 2-CD set called Lords of Chaos. So you'll find different artists who get involved with the satanic, with the left-hand path. I haven't really found much of it among our political figures. Most of our political figures, frankly, I find very bland and conformist and boring. The guy in the White House doesn't ever seem to be very boring these days, but, you know, they don't tend to be philosophical adventurers. The last real philosophical adventurer in the White House was Vice President Henry Wallace, who was a vice president to Franklin Roosevelt. He was Roosevelt's vice president before Harry Truman, and Wallace was a real occult seeker. He was a really fascinating, interesting man, but most of our politicians today are kind of these sanded down, bland corporate figures, and I don't think any of them are really involved with any of this stuff.
Sylvia in Chatsworth, California. Sylvia, go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, Sylvia.
Hi. I actually wanted to say a few things. Number one, the Bible never did say it was an apple. It did say fruit.
Right, that's right.
That's been an assumption for, you know, many years, many people.
Right.
Another thing, and so many things to address, I would say, too, the serpent at the tree, that was a form of deception. And, yes, they did die. Where's Adam and Eve today? They're dead. So he did not, he did lie to them. You shall not surely die. No, that was not true. They did too die. And also, it just was not, I'm sorry, an immediate death. Another thing, we are not the children of Cain. Some are, but the Bible says that Seth, who, even though Cain slew Abel, there was Seth, who was another son who was appointed by God, which Seth means appointed of God. So we are not just children of Cain. We're children of Adam and Eve. Thus, and so we're children of God. However, you know, we have to be very careful because we can't assume, I would say, even when we approach our reading or our studying, we got to ask God because he has our answers, and Satan is not good.
Reaction to that, Mitch? Go ahead.
I think those are all good points. You know, first of all, the caller is absolutely correct. We use just the apple as a slang term. It was some sort of a forbidden fruit. I think that's a lively and vital and defensible interpretation that men and women could have had eternal life or immortal life in those forms. I'm not sure exactly what kind of life it would have been, because if you don't have intellectual illumination, then I think you're almost these kept beings rather than beings who really deserve the mantle of human being. And it depends upon one's interpretation, whether they were being warned that they would die right away or die down the road. And, of course, we aren't exclusively the offspring of Cain, but Eve and Cain are among our ancestors, and I think they're a vital part of who we are. Those aren't ancestors we can shake off. And, of course, God did lessen his punishment of Cain when Cain said, "This is more than I can bear." God put a mark on him and said, "Whoever murders Cain or does violence against Cain will be punished in many multiples." So this is a part of the human personality and human situation.
Mitch, we'll be back and we'll take some more calls with you. Fast night. Mitch Horowitz, our special guest, as we talk about Satan, the occult, and the dark side. His website, MitchHorowitz.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. And stick around, those of you on hold. We'll try to get to you as quickly as we can in our final segment just ahead on Coast to Coast AM as we're talking about the dark side. And we are back with our final segment with Mitch Horowitz, of course, as we take your calls. We're talking about the occult and, of course, evil, the dark side as well. Mitch, in terms of your change, your own metamorphosis, how did that happen and how long did that take?
Well, George, it's interesting. You know, as I said earlier, I felt my spiritual search was becoming kind of a closed circuit. And I had always been interested in some of the figures on the left-hand path. I knew the names of figures like Anton LaVey and Michael Aquino and, you know, some other folks who were part of that world. But it was when I discovered Carl Abrahamson's book, A Culture. It opened my eyes to a different side of Anton LaVey. I must have read it back in the month of October, so it was only a few months ago. And I began to read more deeply, think more deeply, explore more deeply into what could be considered the dark side. Some of the texts and ideas that I encountered are in my article, The Devil's Reading List. And I began to think to myself, what if there's something that feels unsatisfied, some deep inner personal need that feels unmet in an individual in terms of his or her current spiritual path? What if your spiritual path feels like it's at kind of a dead end or stagnating? I felt that way myself. And I thought, who am I not to open a door and ask a question and say, there may be some other set of forces in the world that I've been taught to fear, to avoid, to stay away from, to cordon off. But maybe those forces haven't been understood appropriately. Maybe there's a whole esoteric narrative, counter-narrative, alternative narrative that the individual can explore as part of his search. What if an appeal is made, and what if that appeal is answered? What then? You know, I believe that a spiritual path, an ethical path, should work. It should be practical. You should see changes in your experience. You should see changes for the better in your conduct, in your relationships. What if a person feels like there's something that's being responded to and answered in themselves when they look on the dark side? Are they being tricked? Are they being fooled? Is it the threshold to some sort of tragedy? Well, conventional wisdom would tell us so. But do I know that's true? Do we know that's true? I'm not afraid of the dark side. My biggest fear, actually, is that this life is all there is, that there isn't something beyond us physically. Right. And I believe, of course, there is. But my great fear is not that there's darkness out there, but that there's nothing out there.
But you know what? It won't matter if you're wrong.
What's that? It won't matter if I'm wrong, right? And I do believe there's something beyond the physical, but I'm not afraid of it. Light or dark, however we classify those things, I'm not afraid of it. I'm truly, truly not. My only fear is that my question doesn't deepen, that my exploration doesn't continue. That I'm afraid of. I'm not afraid of what I'm going to find.
You know what I don't like is the possibility that when they bury you in a casket, that your mind stays alert and you know you're in this casket, you can't get out until the end of time.
Oh,
that I don't like.
That's not waiting for any of us.
No, that I don't like at all.
I won't be able to sleep after the show.
Let's go take some final calls here with Mitch Horwitz. Bill in Medford, Oregon is with us. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mitch. Hey, I'm a Schopenhauer atheist, so I respect really all religions. I think it's a normal part of the human experience. But my question is, I want to get your take on this Arthur C. Clarke novel about childhood's end.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever read it, but
I have not. You know, no,
a classic.
Well, in it, this alien species, they're called the Overlords. They come here to Earth, and they solve all our problems. And for years and years and years, they don't reveal their physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But then they finally get to this point to where there's no crime, there's no disease. You know, it's basically the utopia. It's basically utopia. They decide to reveal their appearance. And when they come out of the spaceship, they have cloven hooves, horns, you know, the image that has really been burned into all our consciousness, you know, about the devil.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Sure enough, there are people still that are just completely freaked out after all the good that they've done. There is a group. Do you think that imagery is so powerful that something like that would happen?
That's a fascinating question. I mean, you know, these concepts of good and evil are so deeply embedded in our consciousness that we get hung up on the vocabulary terms themselves or the visuals themselves, and we're unable to measure outcomes in conduct, in experience. And people will sometimes criticize one another, call somebody's views evil or call somebody's views delusional, and I'll say, wait a minute. How is this a serviceable definition unless you're defining it in actual behavior, in actual experience, in actual relationships? And yet, even when pointing that out, people will still just revert to visuals or vocabulary words. We get so acculturated along certain lines that I think you're raising a very profound point. Even if something presents itself as good in terms of experience, in terms of conduct, in terms of behavior, in terms of every practical measure, we still get hung up on symbolism. And it's a kind of counter-thinking because it's not empirical, it's not experiential. And I think that is part of the human problem. We would almost rather judge something by a road sign than by the actual territory. And I think you've raised a profound point, and you've also moved me to order and read that Arthur C. Clarke novel.
Steve is truck driving in North Dakota. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Good evening there.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Well, I can hear you guys. I'm kind of in a bad area.
Yeah, a little pocket. And if you get closer to your phone a little bit, Steve, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, the reason I was calling in was earlier here, I heard you guys talking here a little bit about the Bible with Eve being deceived by the serpent here. With Adam's first wife, Lilith, I'm kind of wondering if there's a correlation here with both the women being, if they were more easily duped, the reason, you know, there was these issues.
Well, you're raising an interesting point. You're the second person tonight who's mentioned the name Lilith.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're very right. Lilith, of course, doesn't appear in Scripture, but she appears in some of the early Hebraic, Judaic writings, and she's identified as a figure that God crafted for Adam, but some people saw her as an excessively independent figure or a maleficent figure, and she and Adam never got along, and she's seen as sort of a counter to Eve. Now, you know, I think that the women in the early chapters of the Bible and the early Hebraic writing have gotten a bad rap in a certain sense, because Eve is sometimes seen as the seducer or as the person who was easily seduced. But the fact is, if you look in Genesis, Eve never really seduces Adam into eating the forbidden fruit. He doesn't seem to require any kind of coercion at all. And I don't think we should see Eve as a weaker figure, but she might represent, if we think of these things in a symbolic way, she might represent Adam's subconscious, Adam's mystical side, Adam's searching side. Eve may be the yin to Adam's yang. We may be talking about one person in a certain sense, and that was the side that went searching, that went questioning, that went exploring.
Next up, let's go to Wayne in Chicago. Wayne, go ahead.
Hey there.
Hi, George.
Hi, Wayne.
All right. Yes, I would like to know what your guest thinks about Anton LaVey's last words on his deathbed. According to the people who were in the room with him, he had some type of vision, and he said, oh, my, what have I done? There's something very wrong here.
Interesting take. And Stephen Jobs, his last words were, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. But what do you think of LaVey's last words, Mitch?
I haven't heard that story. I'd have to go to the small circle of people that were in the room. There's a lot of rumors that circulate online about Anton that are questionable because he was such a flamboyant figure. For example, when he went into cardiac arrest, people like to talk about the fact that he was taken to a Catholic hospital, which is absolutely true, but it's also true that it was the hospital that was in closest proximity to his house. So rather than reading something, some kind of poetic justice into it, you know, Anton was just taken by ambulance to the hospital that was nearest. I haven't heard that story before. I'd have to research it to check out its veracity. There's a lot of strange rumors that fly around online about Anton, but my impression, based on talking to people who knew him, including my friend Carl Abrahamson, is that he led a very full and complete life and enjoyed life.
What was it, Mitch, that changed your mind about him? Because on the face of it, you know, one would think the guy was an evil whack job.
You know, what changed my mind is that I came to realize that he read more deeply and thought more deeply about all these issues, and he really asked himself whether there was a kind of counter-tradition in Western life that hadn't been understood, and whether Satan worship could become a kind of ethical statement, a productive statement, an affirmation of the individual, an affirmation of ideas of rebelliousness and nonconformity and freedom and independence, and a celebration of the pursuit of knowledge rather than seeing it as something fearsome. And he was a greatly original thinker. He was also a showman. There's no question about that. He mythologized his own past. His real name was Howard Levy. It became transformed to Anton LaVey. But being a showman was really part of Anton's life. You know, he believed we could remake ourselves. And I'll tell you a quick funny story. Anton in 1969 told a reporter from the Wall Street Journal that he had played the figure of Lucifer in the movie Rosemary's Baby. And this gets repeated over and over. It's been repeated ever since. It was absolutely not true. He may have provided some intellectual stimulation and inspiration behind the movie, but he was nowhere near the set. But he told this to the Wall Street Journal reporter, who just repeated it, and it's one of the great myths of movie making that's gotten repeated ever since.
Well, it probably has. Mitch, let's take a few more final calls. We've got Mike in St. Peter's, Missouri now. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Oh, hi, hey, George.
Hi.
Hey, I know he was saying early on that he thought we were worshiping the wrong God, that we should be worshiping Lucifer. I think it depends on what your aspirations are. I mean, if your whole aspirations and all and be all are of this world, of this 100 years you're going to spend on this planet, yeah, you should be worshiping Lucifer. But if you have any thought about moving on to the next life, I think a judgment, the fact that you're worshiping Lucifer, is not going to really bear well with you.
What do you think of that, Mitch?
Well, I'm not necessarily telling anybody they should embark on any one particular path of worship. What I'm saying is that people need to search for what answers the deepest yearning in their hearts. For many people, that may be in the direction of traditional religion. For some people, that may be on the left-hand path that I've been describing. I think there's massive forces that go beyond our physical lives, that go beyond our understanding, and we come in touch with them when we feel that they quench or fulfill some sort of thirst that we have inside of us. And I think every individual has to make that determination for him or herself. I'm not proselytizing or evangelizing for one path or another path. I'm saying that the individual has to be open to every kind of possibility and to honor and respect and really venerate what fulfills a deep need inside him or herself.
Could you be wrong about Anton LaVey and that he was really one evil person?
Well, you know, George, I think most of us are pretty complex people. I don't think we run entirely in one direction or another. I could be wrong that I'm idealizing him. You know, I think I was wrong before that I was kind of writing Anton off as kind of a showman. I wasn't sufficiently appreciating him, and I've come into a much deeper appreciation of him. I would like to have known the man, and I don't necessarily say that about everybody who I've studied, but I think there was a great richness to him. We're all complex beings, and I don't think we run in one direction or another. He had scandals in his life. He had brokenness in his life, but I think there was a lot more richness and greatness to the man as a thinker and an artist than I previously appreciated.
Let's get Christine, Prescott, Arizona. Quick question. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hi. I was calling in regards to what he said early on about the Ouija board. I want him to please put out there that it can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, and that you can open a portal to something that you have no control over. And also, I want to know if he believes in demons.
All right. Minute to go, Mitch, and that's all possible.
Well, I think, first of all, Christine is right. One has to approach the Ouija board with aggressive common sense. There are dangers there. I believe in demons. I believe in angels. I believe that there are all kinds of different figures that exist outside of our physical world, but we can't necessarily define these things just by the connotations that the words alone have. These are just words. There are forces out there that we have to discover, and we shouldn't be limited by very strict definitions that we've grown up with. We have to grow beyond those. We have to question beyond those.
Mitch, as we wrap things up, tell us a little bit, when do the next books come out?
Well, I have a new book coming out in the fall called The Miracle Club. That's up on Amazon for pre-order right now. It is my assessment of what really works in mind metaphysics and what non-physical aspects of the mind really work and how you can use them.
All right, Mitch, thank you so much for being on the program. Keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you, George. Appreciate it.
Good. Mitch Horowitz, again, his website is his name, MitchHorowitz.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Tomorrow on Coast to Coast, two go in, one comes out, John Curtis versus Howard Bloom. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.